Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online. We're at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Here's what's coming up on this Tuesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Quite a few stories about education and schools. Schools are trying to deal with their budgets. They're trying to figure out new ways to formulate their school days. And they're also trying to teach kids how to spot real news and fake news. And we'll take a look at those stories and a lot more coming up on this Tuesday edition right here on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. We'd love it if you followed us at KPCGFM on Twitter. And if you have any comments, please send those to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today. We had some nice rain yesterday and today. We needed it, and we've gotten some.
Yeah, it's cloudy and wet out there. It's a nice refreshing change. I actually never realize how long it's been between rains until it's this wet outside, and I can't remember last time that had happened.
You have to get out your galoshes.
Yeah.
Where did I put those galoshes? Do people wear galoshes anymore? I think my dad had galoshes.
Is there a difference between those and just regular rain boots?
Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe I've got my terminology messed up, but I'm thinking of those overshoes, those rubber ones you just put over like your dress shoes.
Mm.
I think, are those galoshes? I don't know.
I don't know, but a lot of kids at IA have something like that. I think they might just be putting their shoes into regular boots that are just way bigger somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're like serving the same purpose as that.
I've exposed my rain footwear ignorance today to the world.
I have no idea either.
Well, I just remember the rubber overshoe. You put them over your dress shoes.
Yeah, that's right. Those are definitely different than a regular boot.
Yeah, they kind of look like the dress shoe, but it keeps your dress shoes nice.
Right.
I haven't seen those in a long time, but my dad had a pair, I think, years ago, back in the 1700s.
Yeah, I've only really seen elderly people wear them. It doesn't seem like they make them for younger people for some reason.
Well, it seems like all the shoes now are kind of waterproof anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's an issue. A lot of stories to talk about today, including this sports note to start. UConn women's basketball team, they picked up their 100th consecutive victory last night. That's pretty amazing. 100 games in a row. You think about the pressure. You know, I suppose initially, you'd think like, hey, we've been doing pretty well. We've been winning. And then you start getting up to 70, 75. You don't want to be the team that loses.
Right.
You know, because if they've won for years and years and years and you come in and lose. So that's a lot of pressure. So congratulations to them. 100th consecutive victory. Not quite the record yet. They're still short of the overall college basketball record for consecutive wins. The very famous and well-known Wayland Baptist women's basketball team won 131 straight from 1953 to 58. It wasn't the NCAA back then. It was the AAU. So I was kind of tongue-in-cheek there. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of the Wayland Baptist women's team, but they were pretty good back in the day.
Right. Yeah, it seems like UConn needs to ease up on their recruiting prowess. They're probably just getting the best players every single year.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a good player and you want to go to a successful program, they've been the model of success. And I've always enjoyed, not that I necessarily go out of my way to watch it, but if it's on high school or women's college basketball, I do appreciate, I think they're a little more fundamental in general than
Definitely.
The men's games, because I think the men try to get, they try to just use a little bit more of the athleticism and the height. In most, you know, if you're 6'10", you're not too worried about shooting form because you're just going to dunk the basketball.
Yeah.
But with the ladies, they seem like they're very fundamental and play a fundamentally more crisp basketball game.
Yeah, I agree with that. That definitely is a refreshing thing to see watching them play, because they're kind of like us, really, where we're not necessarily going to be able to jump through the roof and dunk it every time. So kind of we have to do the same thing.
If you can't, yeah, if you can't jump way up there above the rim, you got to figure out how to shoot it in different ways. So congratulations to them. That's pretty pretty neat record there. Another school-related story, not sports-related, but just with schools. This is from the Business Insider. Schools around the U.S. are finally pushing back their start times, and they say it's working. The kids are tired. They don't want to get up early, and so they're pushing their start times back a little bit. It's had good results so far, mostly. I don't know exactly what everyone will think about this. I mean, I guess I kind of think, like, well, you could go to bed earlier.
True.
And I'm not sure, you know. But maybe in some cases they just can't do that. And they talk about this one district in particular. They say, with a population of just over 11,000, Dobbs Ferry, New York, is your typical sleepy town. I guess that's kind of a funny way to say it because it's a story about sleeping. Except for one thing, when the school bell rings, the kids actually feel awake. They say prior to the 2015-16 school year, Dobbs Ferry middle schoolers started at 8:15 a.m. and high schoolers at 7:30 a.m. That's pretty early for high school. Under the new policy, both schools now start approximately 30 minutes later and end 15 minutes later. So they push back the start time a little bit there. In making those changes, the Dobbs Ferry School District joined a small but growing group of middle and high school students around the U.S. that have started pushing back their start times in an effort to combat grogginess. The changes are bolstered by, they say, a mountain of sleep science research that says preteens and teenagers are some of the society's most sleep-deprived people and would actually do better in school with more rest, which I think is, yeah, pretty accurate. I guess it just depends on what side of the night are you getting your rest on, going to bed earlier or sleeping in later. Everybody would like to sleep in later, but, you know, life doesn't always work that way. I think most people, unless you're self-employed, and even that, sometimes self-employed people work more than anybody. But, you know, you got to get to the office by a certain time. And, I mean, we'd all love to say, push it back a little. But most cases you can't do that. So this might be a good thing, but I'm not sure. How do you feel about it?
It would be pretty nice if, you know, work and school all just started at 9. It's pretty unbelievable what a difference 1 hour makes. But I feel like after a while we'd all just shift to waking up an hour later and still feeling rushed and tired. It would just become the same thing, basically.
Yeah, I have a confession to make that it's sort of embarrassing, but it's in the past, so I can feel like I've gotten over it. My first year in college, you know, you can set your course schedule. When do you want your classes, depending on what classes you're taking? And I was working radio, and so I worked a lot of later evenings and weekends. And so I thought, okay, well, I work later at night, so I'll push my schedule back so I don't have to go to class until noon. My first class will be at noon. I'll go to class from like noon to 6. And so I thought, and this will be great. I'll get up early and I'll get my, you know, studying in and do all that in the morning. Nay. What actually happened is I just end up sleeping later and later and later to where actually it was even a struggle to get to the noon class.
Wow.
Now, I was working late, like I said. I mean, sometimes my shift wouldn't be over till like midnight or 1. But still, it made me realize that, you know, no matter how far you push back the start of the day, you can always end up just sleeping more and more and more. And if you know you don't have to get up, it's so easy to not get up. And so that wasn't good for me. That freedom wasn't great for me.
No, long term, we always just shift and we kind of do away with the extra hour that we were gifted or extra few hours, whatever it may be. It would be nice once in a while, though, if we just had like a random week where every day started at 9. That would be beneficial before we started slipping into wasting that extra time.
Sleep deprivation is it's really a major plague, I think, a curse sort of on the country. It's self-imposed. I mean, here in the U.S., we're so typically distracted, I guess, with internet and entertainment and sometimes work or things that we have to go do. But a lot of times it seems like people are staying up late, much later than necessary, just to fool around, you know, on Facebook or watch a YouTube video or whatever. It's so easy to get into that. And so, I mean, I think it's very rare that somebody would say, boy, I wanted to get to bed earlier last night, but I just got going on those Encyclopedia Britannicas, and it's hard to put them down.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think there's, if I look at my life anyway, there is enough time to get good sleep. I just have to be disciplined enough to get to bed on time. And as an adult, nobody makes you, so you've got to set the, right. you've got to set your own schedule and stick to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty hard sometimes. It's nice, though, if you're tired at the end of the day, then you have no problem going to bed. I mean, if you've really put a lot of work in during the day, then 9 o'clock or so comes around, I'm already tired usually.
Yeah, that's right. And we're in this weird, I don't know, time where, in a lot of cases, jobs are sitting all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you might be mentally worn out, physically, you're not really. And then you kind of got energy or you want to do something and can end up sort of just being in this weird cycle of not getting enough sleep and then sitting a lot. It's just a lot that, I don't know, you just have to really look at and take control of in your life. But for these kids, they say it is helping. They did a new study involving 30,000 high school students across 29 schools in 7 states found that graduation rates and attendance rates both went up in the 2 years after schools pushed start times to at least 8:30. And so it appears like it's helping. There has been some, the only negative about it, I guess, is sometimes it's harder for the parents to meet their schedule. If they've got to get to work by 8 and your kid doesn't have to be to school at 8:30, what are you going to do? So
right.
it has made it more complex for them. But overall, they say that it has helped with the schooling. Probably because they have a little more rest, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've heard that a key time to recharge your adrenals, which give you most of your energy, it seems like, is sleeping between 6 and 7 a.m., which is not ideal for most people. But, you know, they have a half hour more in the mornings now, so maybe they could actually do that a little bit more, especially while their bodies are developing and growing so much. They're going to be tired a little bit more sometimes anyway.
For sure. Yeah, they need plenty of sleep. You know, why is that? I was thinking about this the other day because I had a night last week where I was in bed the right time. I just couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd start thinking about something. For whatever reason, you can't fall asleep. And it's so frustrating because you know I'm going to be tired tomorrow. I want to sleep, but I can't right now. But for some reason, once it hits like 4 or 5 a.m., then automatically you're like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep now. But then you got to turn around and get up right away.
Right.
You just get into sleep, and then you got to get up. And there's something about that time. I don't know if it's like you just finally relax, like, okay, fine, I'm not going to get a good sleep tonight, and then you fall asleep. But that's happened to me several times. And for some reason, about 4 or 5, even if I can't sleep all night, then I feel like I'm getting into a deep sleep, and then I got to get up right away. But I have a feeling if I could keep sleeping, it'd be really sweet, but I can't. Very frustrating.
Yeah, it's kind of like the emergency reserves where your body deep down, even though it's not been letting you sleep all night, it knows that you're still going to have to be somewhere at 8 o'clock. And so it's going to at least give you a couple hours so that you survive the next day instead of going to work after literally being awake the entire night. That happens to me all the time, too, where I'm like mentally tired, and yet for some reason I can't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I absolutely need to go to sleep right now. I'm trying to, and it just won't happen.
Yeah. What's the longest you've ever gone without sleeping?
Oh, well, I don't know if I've ever really broken too many records. Probably like, I don't know, like 20 hours. It's not really been that long for me, I guess.
Yeah. The longest I ever went, and it was because I was, my work schedule and just some other crazy things. And I don't know, I was probably 19 or something, so I was younger. I probably would have been about 2 days.
Wow.
Because I had to work like an overnight shift, and then I ended up like sticking around and just doing some other stuff when I should have gone home and slept, but I didn't. I stayed where I was working, and then I couldn't sleep that night for some reason very well. I had to come in early the next morning for an early shift, and it just didn't work. So anyway, I got you get kind of weird euphoric, and of course this is not recommended. It was just one of those fluky things. And I remember I came home finally after like my last shift of the week. I was very hungry. That was the most pressing thing in my mind. and I stopped at some sort of like sandwich place, like a Subway or something. I went home to my apartment. I ate it, and once like the hunger was satisfied, then like the sleep mode kicked on, and I barely made it from the dining room to my bedroom, which was probably like 20 feet. I collapsed into bed. I was gone. Like it wasn't one of those like drifting off into sleep. Like it's just I was unconscious.
Yeah.
And I woke up probably, I don't know, 18 hours later, something like that. Mm. It was the weekend, so I didn't have to, you know, be anywhere for work or whatever. And I didn't feel great. You know, you just feel kind of like you're still alive, but you don't feel great. And I went and looked out the window, and there was debris all over the apartment parking lot. And like that night, there had been tornadoes ripping through the town. This was up in Wisconsin. And there's sirens going off and emergency vehicles and people dying. I mean, there was not right next to me, but, you know, not too far away, a few miles. No, I had no idea. I was dead to the world. And so I woke up and it was like a bomb went off, you know. So that was one of my most epic awake sleeping moments there.
Thankfully for us, our bodies do decide whether we want to or not what we need, and they force us to get what we need no matter what. I think a lot of people would die in their teenage years if that weren't the case. If your body didn't force you to make up for lost sleep or to eat if you've been running around like crazy, then a lot of people would just die early, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, some people really can't stay up.
No.
You know, and they, you see them and if it gets much beyond when they should be in bed, they're done. Mm-hmm. They're just like, they stop responding and they just kind of like, and other people can push through. And I was usually one that could push through. And then I had other people that I knew that couldn't. And, but the older I've gotten, I'm more that way where I just can't push through. Like yeah. I have to lay down and take a sleep. So,
yeah, I just don't really even try to push through anymore because there were too many nights where I only got a few hours of sleep or less, and I know it's not worth it.
yeah it takes a toll on the next day for sure. So enough sleep is important. I hope there's nobody listening right now that had a bad night's sleep last night. It's just gonna be burning them. He's sitting here listening to all this.
I was awake all night with a headache actually.
Oh.
So me.
Oh,
I'm not upset though.
It's
very relatable. Everyone's going to understand what we're talking about.
I had one epic night too when I was younger teenager, and we were going to this basketball tournament over the weekend, and so I knew we were going to play a few games, so I really wanted to get good sleep. I need to get a good sleep tonight, and I like totally psyched myself out, you know, to where you lay down, you can't sleep. Didn't sleep at all. I laid there, but I didn't sleep, and I was like, oh great, it's going to be ruined. I felt so good the next day. Like, I don't know why, for some reason I couldn't believe how great I felt. I thought, I guess you just lay there. I guess that kind of works. I know it's not the same as sleep, but...
Well, as long as you're not staring at a screen or necessarily doing anything else, your body's still recharging. It's maybe not as much as it could. It's still pretty beneficial, though.
Yeah, I'm one that if I can't sleep, I just keep laying there.
That's a good idea.
I don't really... I'm like, because I know I'm going to be tired anyway. I might as well just lay here and let the earth spin on. I don't know. What do? You just lay there and think about stuff.
That's smart, because sometimes I just get my phone out or something and mm-hmm. I look at it, and that just probably ruins everything.
It kind of gets you going again.
Yeah.
But so interesting. So the school districts are trying to push the school day back a little bit for some of the students, maybe coming to a school district near you. It depends. Here's a related story. It's from Dallas News, Frisco, Texas. Could Frisco ISD, the independent school district, soon use students as janitors? It's just one cost-cutting idea under consideration. They're having some budget issues, I guess, and so they're trying to think of ways that they can save some money, and one of them is to have the students become the janitors. I don't know how the parents feel about that, but...
The students definitely deserve it. I don't know who the kids are, but they deserve it, that's for sure.
When I was in school, the janitor was always a really sort of like a mythological figure. It was always men in my experience, and we sort of were afraid of them. They kind of operated on their own. They came and went as they saw fit, and they always seemed disgruntled and a little bit upset. And in middle school, we feared him. His name was Mr. Rice, and we called him Mr. back in the day. And he had the big broom, and he would stand there in between classes looking like at all the students with his broom. And the legend at the school was that if you were running, he would trip you with the broom. I never saw it, but that was the urban legend at our school. They said, don't run past Mr. Rice. He'll trip you with the broom.
Seems like the type of person to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every janitor I've seen, they definitely get down to business. They don't have too much interest in talking usually.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to do their job and be left alone.
Yeah. We were afraid of Mr. Rice. He was kind of an authority figure in middle school. But then when we got to high school, no one respected him. His name was, they called him Bucky.
Oh, no.
He was nice. Like, nobody was mad at Bucky, but he just did his own thing. It's like, hey, there's Bucky. You'd see people walk by him. You know, like, I remember groups of, like, say, the football players and stuff, and they'd be walking by, and they're like, hey, Bucky. And he would just keep on sweeping. So it was a real flip-flop there between middle school and high school. We feared him in middle school and high school. He was kind of, I don't know, almost like a mascot in a way.
Yeah, Bucky's a fun nickname, too. I like that.
So he didn't seem to mind it, but they're thinking about maybe having the students do some of the janitorial here at this Frisco ISD school district. They say that's one of several suggestions from volunteers trying to help the nearly 60,000 student school district deal with a budget shortfall brought on by loss of state funding combined with voters' rejection last August of a tax rate hike. Frisco ISD leaders and community members recently got their first look at the bevy of possible cost-saving strategies. They've had to do some things here in Oklahoma, too, because of the downturn in the revenue from oil because of the price drop. One thing in Oklahoma they did, one of the districts, they went to a four-day week instead of five, made it a little longer, but that saved on the busing, I guess. They say in addition to having students empty trash cans to cut back on janitorial staff hours, which I don't think is a bad idea. I mean, you should be responsible, clean up your area.
Yeah.
Recommendations also included charging students up to $200 to participate in athletics. You want to play on the team? Where's that money? That's a little weird. I mean, if you're joining a private league, you have to pay. But school, it seems like it should be a freebie.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way it's always been.
That is what taxes go to, I believe, is your public schools.
You know, it's one thing I've thought about a little bit over the years. Here in the U.S., we're very fortunate, very blessed, because you go to school. I mean, yeah, there's a public school just about anywhere you go, and they provide everything, for the most part, for you. And, of course, you know, it's easy as a kid to be like, oh, great, you know, I got to go to school. But you get to go to school. You get to be educated, and you're paying taxes. But it's not like you have to, you know, come up with some huge amount when you go to college. Then you do. But the fact that you can get most of your basic education, you know, just with the tax money is pretty great. But some of these districts are having some problems. So we'll see what happens there if they end up having the students be the janitors. I don't know if it would be a cleaner school or a dirtier school. Probably dirtier.
Hopefully they get punished, though, if it's dirty. That would do it right there.
Maybe they'll be. Maybe the people will switch districts. I don't know. Don't know if that would make it any better. In a related note to that, you know, we've talked about just how there's so much diversity in some of these school districts, but how much is too much? 140 student languages in suburban Georgia school district. They have 140 languages. I didn't even know there were 140 languages.
I didn't either. Yeah, I read about one. One school in Buffalo, New York, that has like 42.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
the one of the school officials there in this Georgia school district said, "We have 102,000 students here. They come from more than 180 countries, and they speak 140 languages. We value them. We love them, and we respect what their presence here says about the goodness and generosity of America. Our diversity is our strength." And I think they're kind of putting this out there as some sort of a pushback against the idea of closing down illegal immigration.
Yeah.
But my only thought about it is just practically, how do you educate everybody? I mean, with all those different languages, now maybe they all speak English and then they have a secondary language. I'm not sure how it breaks down, but just in terms of practicality, how could you even come to any sort of an education?
Well, that's what the big issue with that whole thing is that all of the English-speaking students are forced to progress at a slower rate because they have to make sure they cater to all of the ones who don't even speak English who are in their same classroom. It's not even like they put different speakers or foreign language speakers into a different class. They're in there among the English students, English speaking students, and it does slow those kids down.
When I went to school, we never even dreamed of people speaking a different language in the school. We all spoke English. We took foreign language. You could take French. Well, I don't know if we could take French. We could take Spanish and German. Maybe those were the two main ones that we had, I think. So it's going to be probably a challenge there in, I don't know, some of these school districts if you have so many languages. Makes me think of the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, well, that just shows you that that story has practical application to this day. You can't really coexist in the same place if everyone is speaking a different language. In one school district, over 140 languages, that just can't work.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, we did have some students that came in from Laos, a fair number. They were moving over to our area, and they did have their own language, but I think they spoke English as well. We never spoke their language, which is good because it was very difficult. They're so different, English, and their language was just more of a tonal Asian sort of language where the pitch and things change the meaning. We had a social studies class one particular day where we had to watch an opera from over there, just I guess to appreciate the culture better or something. And I'm sure it's great, but boy, I literally walked out of there with a headache just because of how high pitched everything was. Ugh. I'm sure if you're used to it, you know, it's nice and you like it, but it was just so different. And so, you know, it's tough when there's just very different cultures and very different languages. It's hard to communicate. It's hard to do anything. But even back then, I think they all spoke English at least pretty well. Or if they didn't, they had to learn it pretty quickly. They didn't have teachers or anybody speaking their language, so they just had to kind of, you know, become like the rest of us, like U.S. citizens.
Yeah, they had to assimilate. Yeah. That is a good question as well. How exactly do you solve an issue like that? It would seem like that would have to be a requirement for getting into the country, maybe already having a basic grasp of the English language, because otherwise you're basically sending the kids to not be educated. They're not getting too much of an advantage there.
Yeah.
So maybe that should be just one of the requirements.
Really interesting. I just didn't even know there were that many languages. But I'm sure there's a lot of them, I guess.
There's so many tribal ones, you know, like throughout Africa and other remote locations, which really jacks up the number.
Yeah. If you've ever gone to a job interview, you've probably been asked a couple of questions. It says, this is the one question Elon Musk asks in every job interview. It's funny, they say it's the one question, but there's like 10 questions in the question. He was speaking at the World Government Summit in Dubai. He's a billionaire technology entrepreneur. I always wanted to be one of those. Revealed the key question he would ask of someone wanting to work for him. And this is the question/questions. Tell me the story of your life and the decisions that you made along the way and why you made them. And also tell me about some of the most difficult problems you worked on and how you solved them.
That's not even formed in a question.
No. I think the main thing he's getting at is, what's a big problem you faced, whether at work or whatever, and how did you solve it? That's what he's interested in, your problem-solving aptitude and your thought process and how you would solve a problem.
Yeah, that's understandable because obviously in business, there will be a ton of unforeseen circumstances that come up. You're going to have a lot of competitors to try to outsmart, and so you need to be really resourceful and extremely good at problem solving.
He said people that really solved the problem, whatever it was, they know exactly how they solved it, and they know the little details. He said, but if they're pretending, they're pretty lacking in the details, and that's how he knows. I mean, everyone's going to try to answer it in a positive way or say what they think he wants to hear. But he says if they know the details, then he's pretty sure they solved the problem. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then he's pretty sure they're pretending. So I don't know if anybody out there has a job interview coming up with Elon Musk, but if you do, now you know. Now you'll be prepared.
Congratulations, by the way, if you do.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think you'd have to be pretty good at what you're doing to get that job interview. There is a debate brewing. This is a very important debate. Do dogs like hugs or not? Some people say yes, their dog wants to be hugged. Others say no, the dog does not want you hugging them. Thoughts?
The smart thing would be to just avoid hugging the dog because you don't know how the dog's going to respond.
This is from the Business Insider. They say the reason, this is a person talking about this topic, the reason we say they don't like being hugged, and this, they're coming down on the side of the dogs not liking it, is because of what they look like when you're hugging them. They pin their ears back, they lick their lips, sort of air licking, or they yawn, which is another stress behavior, they say. I thought they were just tired. or bored. Or they move to get away, or they show this kind of whale eye posture. You can see the whites of their eyes. They show behavior that's like, this is uncomfortable. That's how many people respond to hugs. Or as Horowitz, the guy that's speaking here, succinctly put it, dogs are just dealing with it. He says they don't like your hugs, but they'll deal with them.
It doesn't seem like a good idea to make a dog stress.
Yeah. I think they would feel trapped. They're in danger. You know, I think that would be a natural instinct. They say, so as adult humans, we can limit our own impulse to hug dogs. I have no such impulse.
Not at all.
I just want to hug that thing. Impulse control, they say, is much harder when you're an infant. And so that's where they say it gets to be difficult because children like to hug dogs as well. And sometimes the dogs will attack them because they're smaller and they don't like it.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot where a cat or a dog will attack a baby.
Mm-hmm.
The baby just has no concept that something would be out there that would try to hurt it.
Our neighbor had a dog when I was a kid. He was a big black dog, and his name was Blackie. And he was friendly dog and everything, and we'd play with him occasionally. And I remember one time I was petting him, and he was having fun, and I made the mistake of trying to hug him around the neck. And he was nice enough about it, but he gave me kind of the little nip and the growl, like, get off me. And so I gave Blackie his space after that.
Oh, no.
He did not want to be hugged. Didn't like it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever hugged a dog in my whole life, actually. One, I'm allergic, but two, I'm just not sure of how they'll react. It just doesn't make me feel comfortable at all.
You have to be really nervous if the dog comes and hugs you. That's when you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with this. There are these new, I think it's new, they call them comfort dogs. You heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Where people carry these little dogs around. Usually they're little, and they say they need them because they give them comfort or something. I don't know if that's a legitimate thing or they just want to carry the dog around in their purse, but I've seen them in stores quite a bit.
Yeah, it's like it's a loophole for allowing a pet into the store when in most cases it wouldn't be allowed. I actually saw a guy take a gigantic dog into those same stores that he saw comfort dogs in.
Oh, really?
And he said it was his comfort dog. It just happened to be way bigger than the other comfort dogs. They didn't like it for some reason.
Oh.
That's not really fair.
I was going to ride in my comfort mule into Walmart, and they didn't like that. That man is on a mule. I need it. Need it for comfort. There's always racial stuff that's happening, sadly, and particularly on college campuses. And here's two stories related to that. This is from the College Fix. Students wear white pins to remind them of white privilege. This is at Elizabethtown College this month. Students, white students primarily, are wearing white pins in the shape of puzzle pieces. I wonder if you put them together, they'd make like one big puzzle.
Hopefully.
Or if it's all the same piece. to remind them of their white privilege. And my only thought on that is, why would, like, I'm white, Caucasian. Why would I need to wear that? I wouldn't my skin remind me of my whiteness? I don't need to wear a white puzzle piece to remind me of my race.
One would think. You know, this does not have to be happening.
No.
I wish these kids realized that this was not an important issue to be complaining about all the time.
No, it's not. And you know what I thought of was when the Nazis made the Jews wear the Star of David.
Mm-hmm.
We're branding each other now. We have to wear things. We have to wear lapel pins to let people know about our racial standing. Does anyone stop and look back and say, wait a second, this seems like a really, really bad idea?
Yeah, it really does. There were also those safety pins. I guess it was about illegal immigration and how they were in favor of that. You know, we're not it's like they're drones or they're just robots, and they're all, you know, dressing the same way and just thinking the exact same way. It's a pretty bad example of groupthink. It's like it's a mental disease.
And related to that, from Heat Street, on the other side of the spectrum, Yale is going to host a Black Panther party to celebrate Black History Month. Black Panthers were violent. It's a violent group. I don't know why you'd celebrate that. But there, so on one college, is gonna the whites have to wear the white pins, and on the other college at Yale, they're going to have the Black Panther party. I'm guessing you'd have to be careful who you were in attending that. It doesn't seem like it would be a great idea, but again, just stirring this stuff up, and as you mentioned, it just doesn't have to be happening.
No.
Nothing constructive is coming from this. That's the problem. I know maybe the idea with some is that this will somehow cause unity. By highlighting all the differences just repeatedly and one side accusing the other, and it goes both ways, that's not going to help. It's not going to help anybody.
And it's pretty hypocritical as well when the media loves to call Mr. Trump divisive, and yet this is actually a divisive thing. This is not just saying we're all different and let's all share our differences with each other and enjoy that. It's we're different, we're ashamed of it, or in the case of the Black Panther Party, we are different and we're proud of it. On the one hand, you have white shame, and on the other hand, you have black pride. Don't we realize that those are both races and they both have nothing to do with the person's character or the way they think, yet we should be ashamed of one color and happy about another?
Yeah, it is in an effort, I guess, to overcome racism. People are becoming more racist than ever.
Yeah, they're self-segregating. It's insane.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Really bizarre. Yeah, I read just a little blurb last night about the Grammys. They always have fallout over that. And whoever was writing it, I think it was New York Times, they were mad because not enough of one race won the awards and too many of the other race won awards. And you can guess which way that goes. But yeah. But it just, again, how does it have to fall along racial lines for it? People to be happy, you know, because again, isn't that more racist than anything, as opposed to just looking at the music and saying, hey, people like this. I don't know how they come to their decisions. I'm not, and a lot of times they're probably wrong decisions. Who knows? It's an award show. It makes no difference.
Yeah.
But they're just constantly scrutinizing everything under the racial microscope. And that's a bad way to do things. It just causes more and more problems.
It would be nice if the media would just let it go. I think deep down they know that there are slightly more white people winning awards because there are also slightly more white people in the industry. There are dozens and scores of black people who are in music, movies, who everyone loves. It has nothing. There are not people who say, you know, he's black, so I don't like him. That's just not happening. People are being awarded based on how good their work is. It has nothing to do with skin color. It never should.
And again, awards are always subjective. And so sometimes maybe what didn't go the right way, but to pin it back on race, that's a pretty slippery slope.
In most of those shows anyway, the movies that most people are clamoring for to win don't win anything.
Right.
I know that we're talking about a music award show in this case, but still, isn't it an injustice every time when the common man wants something to get an award and it doesn't happen?
Yeah.
What about the discrimination against all the actual fans?
Well, that does happen even in the music awards. There's always, and I don't pay attention to them that much these days, but when I was younger, I'd watch them a little more. And, you know, you kind of knew what was popular and what people liked. And then some obscure band would win something. You're like, what? Nobody even knows who that is.
Right. Like the critics believe that they know better than all of the people who actually have made something else, something completely different, popular.
Yeah, they're trying to be sometimes a little artsy in their selections, I guess. But anyway, it's always interesting. Of course, this one happens. Sometimes people, especially if they're on the air, they say something that they shouldn't say and it causes them trouble. Josh Elliott, who's been a reporter for the different networks, he's reportedly been fired from CBS News after an on-air blunder Elliott was fired surrounding fallout over his on-air announcement on Friday that he was leaving his job as the anchor of CBS Digital Channel, CBSN, for a broader role on CBS News. So he signs off and says, well, you know, thank you, and I'll be going on to this other thing. And the problem is that it was a premature announcement. CBS executives didn't know that he was going to quit the job.
What?
So they just fired him.
Oh, no.
Poor guy. They say this is a mess of epic proportions. Nobody at the top of CBS News knew that Josh was going to do that, make that big announcement. And so Elliott reportedly met with CBS News executives on Monday morning and then was fired and then escorted out of the building by security. So apparently he made the announcement before they were ready to make the announcement, and they didn't like it, so they fired him. So he's lost his job.
That is crazy. That just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. He said he was going to stay with CBS.
Yeah.
Just in a slightly different role.
Right. And So maybe, I don't know, maybe it's always interesting with some of those things because, you know, maybe somebody had told them, like, yeah, we're going to do this, but, you know, give it some time and we got to work out a few details. And he made it public before anybody else knew because, see, you don't know, like, maybe they were going to replace somebody else, but they didn't want that person to know, right? You know how that goes. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, he caused some trouble there. So he'll have a hard time probably getting back in once you kind of have a problem like that, especially publicly. It's hard to get back on other places. And he's been all over. He was on ABC's Good Morning America. Then he went to NBC News, and then he went to CBS. So he's been at all the big networks. I guess he has to go to Fox still.
Yeah.
MSNBC.
Yeah,
they'll take him.
He might already be financially set for life anyway, depending on his role. But a lot of those people, they probably don't need to work anymore. They're making so much money on those jobs.
Yeah, so I'm not real familiar with him, but I probably have seen him on a couple of reports here and there. Trump Daily Radio Show is coming up here in a bit on KPCG, along with the Key of David program. Make sure you listen for those. And make sure you check out thetrumpet.com today for headlines and analysis pieces. Here are some of the headlines from today on thetrumpet.com. Iran chooses Quds Force, stalwart, for new ambassador to Iraq. Why Europe is warning of Pax Americana's end. How Obama is scheming to sabotage Trump's presidency. The threat of Grexit returns, Greece leaving the EU. And how Russia became the Middle East's new power broker. That and more at thetrumpet.com on the headlines section. And then, of course, a lot of analysis pieces as well. Grant, you have a story for us. This is ties into education as well. I've had a few education stories today. Schools now are teaching the students how to determine fake news from real news. What are the details?
Well, it's talking about a lot of schools, especially in New York, since this article's from the New York Post. And it's all about how basically they're introducing these strange new courses into the students' curriculum where they think they know what fake news is, and they don't believe their students would know. So they are teaching their students what is real and what is fake. The weird part about it to me, though, is it seems like every single one of them is a Democrat, and they seem jilted still about how the election played out, not so much in their favor this time around.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be a real big fan of this. This seems like indoctrination to me. And I feel like that's the parents' responsibility. Maybe not so much in the, you know, getting into fake news. I think that whole thing is kind of a sideshow. Mm-hmm. But to talk about truth and lies and to teach the difference between the two, that's a parental responsibility, I think. I don't think the school needs to be giving their propaganda.
Exactly. And I thought there were two specific ways that maybe the parents could actually deal with this instead of the schools having to. One, if the parents limit their kids' usage of screens and social media, that would really help a lot, because a lot of the time people are getting their headlines off of a tweet or off of, you know, some Facebook post. They're not really going any deeper than that. They're just getting the very surface details from someone who probably has an inherent bias. And that's not really a good way to get the news. So if the kids are tied to the screens all the time, then that's where they're going to find things probably. And also, if parents just teach their kids to have just a natural hunger for learning and to always be trying to read, they wouldn't just stop at one story that's false. They would probably try to read about it from five other sources and really get to know what is being talked about instead of just taking the first thing they see as truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's always amazing how some of the different networks that really talk about this subject of fake news, I think, are some of the fakest ones out there.
Exactly.
Because you look at the way they've reported on the past administration and now the way they're reporting on the current administration, and they do it in a completely different way. Everything is negative with this current one. Everything was positive with the last one. And neither one is right. It's not all good or not all bad with either administration. But how about just reporting the truth of the matter? And then to sit there and talk about fake news, I mean, President Trump has called some of those networks fake news to their face. and I think he's right in that because they're pushing an agenda. I mean, if you really want to break it down, what's fake news? Well, fake news is distorting the facts, or it's covering up certain things or not reporting certain things to push an agenda. That's what fake is. Mm-hmm. Is there some truth in it? There might be, but they're pushing an agenda. It's propaganda. It's not just reporting the facts on the ground.
Right. And it also has to do with, you know, neglecting to report certain things because that doesn't quite fall in line with your prefabricated stories. There are a lot of ways to just disseminate falsehoods, and we're seeing that from just so many different sources now. Maybe they should go to the media and give them a course about what is fake news and what is not. If we get to the source of it and we get the actual sources to stop disseminating fake news, then the students wouldn't have to discern what is true and what is not.
Well, the irony is fake news really comes, it starts at the educational system. It starts at really starts at the lower levels all the way through universities in particular, because they have a very, in most cases, leftist ideology. So they're the ones that really got it, probably the fake news going, because they do control the media for the most part. Not to say there wouldn't be fake news, quote unquote, on the other side, but the one you see is pretty much on the left. And now those same schools are telling the kids, here's how you determine fake from real. Well, the whole thing's a sham. I think in the article, if I recall, they gave some of their tips, like what they're recommending. Did they give those as far as what they would tell the students to look for in determining fake news?
Right. There have been a lot of courses about this. There was actually a California lawmaker who tried to pass this bill that would – he's a Democrat, of course. He tried to pass a bill about installing curriculum into 7th to 12th grade classrooms about teaching about fake news. They do have some tips here that – I could read in this article and not have to take an entire class about it. So maybe that's how they should handle this. Tips on how to spot fake news. If the URL or the actual name of the website looks strange, if it has something like a .com, .co, that could be a bit of a deceptive source. That's really pretty simple, I think. There's other points, like if the story makes you mad, if it's targeting emotions with these outlandish claims, then common sense will probably tell you it's not true. It probably isn't true because of that.
Oh boy, that's really murky.
That is tough.
If it makes you mad, well, so truth is determined on how I feel about it.
Yeah,
my emotional response to it determines whether it's fake or real.
I mean, people have gotten so ridiculous today that they would do the things that are in a lot of these fake news stories. There was one about Mr. Obama banning the Pledge of Allegiance at schools. Now, he didn't do that, but it wouldn't be hard to see someone doing something like that. So, that does make people mad. But the thing is, if you just look into it a little bit, you'll see pretty quickly it's not true.
Yeah. Sometimes I get bills in the mail. They make me mad. Is that from a fake agency?
It's all fake. You don't have to pay this.
I'm not paying this mortgage. I'm mad about this bill. I'm emotionally upset.
It is such a tough category to judge there, and to think that liberal teachers and professors are going to be basically slanting their students' viewpoints, that is a bit alarming.
I mean, really what they're saying is they're trying to show you, well, I guess they're classifying fake news as anything that doesn't agree with their ideology. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. That, I mean, that really, if you want to cut down to the chase, I think that's it. If it doesn't agree with our ideology, our worldview, it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, that's like being a kid and you're just pretending, you know, and anything that doesn't fit into your daydream, well, I'm not going to pay attention to it. That's not the basis of truth, though. The basis of truth would be, does it square with God's word? You know, ultimately. But if you're talking about just a, you know, reporting on a news story, what happened? What actually happened? What occurred? And it's hard to get that because they like you said, they bury some stories and then they really emphasize other ones. And they might all be valid stories, but the way they're highlighting them or the way they're ignoring them has everything to do with pushing forward their ideology. So they might say, hey, this isn't a fake story. This happened. Yeah, but you highlighted it too much and you buried this other one over mm-hmm. here. So your presentation is fake, even if your stories might have some legitimacy to them.
Yeah, they're sticking to the absolute letter of the law to decide what is fake and what is not. But what happened when this whole subject of fake news came up, they used it as an opportunity to attack conservative websites like Breitbart, where if you actually go to the Breitbart website, those are some of the most well-researched articles you'll read. They're full of stats. They're full of references to a lot of official reports. You can easily obtain the reports. The articles themselves link to the reports they're quoting. It's not hard to figure out that they are being as reputable as possible. And yet, a lot of liberals decided to target Breitbart specifically because Steve Bannon used to run it, and now he's an advisor to Mr. Trump. It really just seemed like an opportunity for them to go on the all-out assault against every news source that they personally disagree with.
They've been trying to take down conservative news for a long time. Drudge, Fox, talk radio, conservative talk radio. But they respond the highest. They always do. They get the highest numbers because there is probably a little more truth in those. Not to say everything's true or not to say they don't do the same thing where they highlight what they want to highlight. But at least they're giving you, I think in most cases, a little more of a balanced view on things. And people respond to that. So it is and I never really heard anything about fake news until Hillary Clinton started losing.
That's the convenient part of it,
yeah,
huh? It really is quite the coincidence that it's all right after the election that this has become such a concern all of a sudden.
Yeah. Before that, I don't remember too much about it. Although I do remember reading where President Obama wanted to, he wanted some sort of like board in place or something to determine, you know, truth from error in reporting. And I thought, well, that's about as communist as you can get.
Yep.
North Korea does that. They determine truth and error. But their version of truth is not the truth.
And the thing he did there, too, it was pretty wily. He did it while a lot of people were, I believe they were distracted over some sort of a holiday weekend, and it was buried within a much more all-encompassing type of bill that he signed into law. So a lot of people just looked over. They didn't even notice what was going on. It was quite a crafty move that he made there.
Yeah. But again, the only reason I knew about it is I think Drudge pulled it up.
Exactly.
Somebody pulled it up out of something else and highlighted it. Otherwise, you wouldn't hear about it. So, well, it's really interesting. That's a topic we hear a lot about, fake news, real news. Now they're teaching the kids how to spot it. And boy, I don't think that's a great idea, but that's what's happening. Kids are going to go to school a little later. They're going to be well rested, and then they can teach them about fake news and real news. So
yeah.
There's your school day. And then you got to be the janitor and pay $200 to play sports. So the world's changing. It's not the same world we knew.
Yeah, it's like we're all too observant of people's grievances, and we have to bend to those at all times.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Those are some things going on. Thanks for joining us here on this Tuesday edition of Trumper Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.